Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The Fangirls Podcast is brought to you by Believe Podcast Network, and we want to take a moment and thank you for tuning into our podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts so that we can reach more people. Thanks so much. Hello and welcome to the Fangirls Podcast. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Julie, and we are so excited to dish and spill the tea with you today.
So today we are talking about the fan theory that led us to starting our podcast. This is a big deal. This is a big episode. We have been in February.
Yeah.
This whole theory came to a head. We had a whole blog post written.
I just remember thinking as we were putting the finishing touches on our blog post, and you mentioned like, oh, well, you should get your own blog post. And I was like, I really don't want to write an essay a week. I'm good in that department.
Yeah, that's a me thing.
Yeah. And you said, well, you should at least have a podcast. And I was more or less along the lines of like, well, I wouldn't start a podcast without you.
Yeah.
And here we are today.
This is our, I think this is our 18th episode.
I think so.
Yeah, this episode's airing September 1st. And
we're going back to Hogwarts.
Yeah, going back to Hogwarts. Folks. The Hogwarts Express has picked us up and we went through platform 9 3/4. Best if you do it at a bit of a run if you're nervous. this has been a long time coming. So we've kind of had this written since February and we're just now recording it, you know, at the end of August. So this is our big one here.
Yeah, this is such a long time coming. So today's episode is inadvertently brought to you by the global health pandemic and the huge amount of downtime that came with it.
Well, I mean, you had asked me to read The Cursed Child like way before. It was hard for me to read a script and I was reading other books and like life was busy. But then when quarantine happened, you were like, you need to finish this or you need to read this. And I was like, okay.
Yes.
We have a major fan theory on how the Fantastic Beasts series is supposed to end or might end. And we are well aware of the controversies and the craziness and chaos that has surrounded the Fantastic Beasts franchise. And while we are not a political podcast, we don't in any way condone the comments made by J.K. Rowling about the LGBTQ+ community at all. We do want to emphasize that there is so much to look forward to in this franchise. So jump on this train with us and hear us out because this fan theory is going to blow your mind.
The reason we are stressing the importance of these fan theories is because Harry's story wouldn't have happened if the Fantastic Beasts series didn't take place. The missteps that happen in the Fantastic Beasts series is what triggers Harry's story to be told. So quarantine happened. And as any dedicated Harry Potter fan does, you binge watch the Harry Potter series because you have that kind of downtime. I was determined to figure out the remaining plot lines in the Fantastic Beasts series, particularly because the Crimes of Grindelwald ended with some pretty heavy cliffhangers. And I was determined to figure out the end of these storylines. And I had the downtime to do it.
Yeah.
Then I gave up and I was just stumped and frustrated and, you know, all in my feelings with the rest of the pandemic.
Okay. So at what point in your theory process, did you give up? Okay, here's a wall. I can't go past this. Like, what were your thoughts of like, what was starting to kind of percolate in your head as far as the theory?
I was watching for social cues, body language, thinking like something would tell me something that I wasn't picking up on.
So you didn't have like a theory already in your head per se. You were looking for a theory.
Yeah. I rewatched the Harry Potter series.
Mm-hmm.
And was thinking maybe there are clues from the Harry Potter series that I should be actively looking for in the Fantastic Beasts series, like little Easter eggs that would line these two up perfectly. And there are, and we'll get to that. But yes. I was also looking at social cues saying, you know, I don't know, maybe Credence blinks the same way as James Potter does or whatever the case may be. Like I was looking for genetic traits of something I should be picking up on.
You were looking for a theory. You didn't have one already, which makes sense because she did write the script after the movie. So she could definitely plant all those things if she
Absolutely.
Wanted to. And that's definitely J.K. Rowling's MO.
So after I gave up, my friend Melinda, shout out to Melinda, sent me a Harry Potter conspiracy theory about Crookshanks. And that just like relit the fire. And I did not sleep for 44 hours straight.
I don't even know how that is possible.
Typically, I am someone who needs 8 hours of sleep consistently. I was just so determined. And again, unemployed, had the downtime. And I was like, somebody talk to me about this, please. I need to get this off my chest. And like, whether it was sharing the Crookshanks conspiracy theory. And
that's so funny. Every time you're I was unemployed, I'm like, I think of Princess Bride when he's like, do you want to go back to where you were unemployed in Greenland? And I'm like, yeah. And so I think it was around this time, I think you had, were like, you need to read this book. I think I read, I don't know, if the first 10 pages and then put it down.
Okay.
And then you were like, finish this. And then I texted you that I finished The Cursed Child, and then all hell broke loose.
Oh, I know. I was just like, finally, someone to talk to about this. For those of you who have not read The Cursed Child, please do yourself a solid, because after you read that and or see the play, that was the mindset I had, that nothing is off the table. Everything is possible.
Everything is possible.
Everything.
Yes.
I can't rule out any crazy scenario after The Cursed Child came into play. No pun intended.
Yeah. So that whole summer, we basically would text, chat. You would come over. We talked theories. We did themed dinners. Like, I made freaking pumpkin juice.
Yeah, you did.
And butter beer. We did like a whole thing. Quarantine gave us so much time and space. And I think sometimes boredom leads to the best creativity. Like, it's just a known fact.
Right.
And so it was like our brains just, we had so much space to be creative that it was like just one thing kept leading to another. Like, you would tell me one thing, then I would tell you something. And then it just snowballed like
really
out
did.
Of control. And we had so many light bulb moments.
It was the healthiest distraction I could have ever asked for during this pandemic. And having a friend, let alone now business partner, talking Harry Potter conspiracy theories with me was the best blessing I could have ever asked for out of all of this. So
yeah, there was at one point, I think I sent you a gif of like Step Brothers where he's like, did we just become best friends? And like, we literally did.
We
became best friends over quarantine. Like, we were good friends before. And then it was like, I don't think we even realized, we knew we had stuff in common. We knew we were big fangirls about things. We met at an Outlander fan event. But at that point in my life, I hadn't read Harry Potter. I read it the next year, 2018. I would read a book, watch the movie, read a book, watch the movie. By 2020, I was a full-fledged Harry Potter fan, addict, reading it to my kids. So like, jumping on this train with you, I'm like, twist my arm. This is so terrible. No, I was like, yeah, because I'm a huge nerd too. Like, we're both really big nerds when it comes to like books that we love. And like, you know, as a writer writing, you know, plot lines and storylines, like thinking about plot lines of other stories, you know, in books, like, I love that crap. That is so fun to me. I mean, you're right. Like, it was a huge blessing for our friendship to be where it is now. Having that experience, we just let our nerdy freak flags fly quarantine. And it was like,
we built link charts
with string.
Yeah. Like what detectives use to catch a criminal.
Yeah. Solving murders.
Yeah. We did with their Harry Potter / Fantastic Beasts conspiracy theories. There's no one else I'd rather build a link chart with than with you. Just putting that one out
there. Same. Back at you, sister. So here's the part of the show where we spill the tea. We are talking spoilers. We are talking fan theories. If you have not read all of the Harry Potter books, The Cursed Child script, or seen either of the Fantastic Beasts movies, please do yourself a favor and do that immediately. And then listen, because we're about to blow your minds.
We have a solid fan theory on who Credence's parents are, and we'll walk you through every step on how we got to our conclusion.
Credence Barebone was an obscurus that we met in the first Fantastic Beasts movie. At the end of Crimes of Grindelwald, the second Fantastic Beasts movie, Grindelwald tells Credence that he is actually Aurelius Dumbledore.
The Fantastic Beasts series takes place during the late 1920s leading up to World War II.
So starting with the end of Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, he asks Queenie what Credence is thinking, and she reveals that he is questioning being here. He needs reassurance that he made the right decision. So Grindelwald manipulates the truth and tells Credence that he is a Dumbledore. He renames Credence as Aurelius and reveals that Albus Dumbledore is his brother.
Things to know about Grindelwald. He's a seer. the scene in the mausoleum where he casts this vision for everybody to see a second world war.
Yeah.
I had no idea that that was like a vision of his for whatever reason. I don't think that it was explained that he could see the future or that he got visions. I just thought, oh, he's, you know, showing, like showing something, but not fully explaining what it is or just like what to fear later on down the road. So yeah. I don't think any of his followers really knew that he was a seer and showing a vision. He's misread his visions before too. So he did not pick up on the fact that Credence was the Obscurus in the first Fantastic Beasts movie at all. That's a big misstep on Grindelwald. There was a point where I was questioning, is he misreading a vision about Credence being related to Dumbledore, or is he manipulating the truth? And I ended up going with he's manipulating the truth because he wants Credence to be on his side as an Obscurus to defeat Dumbledore.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think he is manipulating the truth, but he got close to figuring out who the Obscurus was. He knew it was one of these orphans.
Right.
And maybe one of the girls, because the only other Obscurus that he probably knew was Ariana Dumbledore.
Right.
So he's thinking maybe it's a girl that whatever. And we're led to kind of believe that as well. So he could be close, but he's also manipulating him at the same time.
Absolutely. So for those of you who need a quick recap on what an Obscurus is, an Obscurus is created when a wizarding child attempts to repress their magical abilities or are forced to do so through physical or psychological abuse. That checks out perfectly with Credence. We saw it in the orphanage. Here's the other fun fact. The other Obscurus in the Potter universe is Ariana Dumbledore, and her backstory is at the age of 6, Ariana was attacked by a group of Muggle boys who saw her practicing underage magic and left her like severely traumatized. That is eventually what created her Obscurus. She was too afraid to practice magic, even though it was building up inside of her. And I think the way that they illustrate an Obscurus on screen is just amazing.
It's incredible.
I mean, I would love to see them show Ariana's Obscurus.
Do you think they will show a flashback in the next Fantastic Beasts a movie of that moment?
I hope so, because Ariana's Obscurus is what killed Dumbledore's mom. Like, it just got out of control one day. And her mom was at the wrong place in the wrong time trying to calm her down, and she couldn't control it.
Yeah.
And that's what killed Kendra Dumbledore. Speaking of Dumbledore's parents, this is how we're ruling out that Credence is not a sibling to the Dumbledores.
Yeah, so we don't know if there's a genetic link to having an Obscurus, but if Ariana and Aurelius are in fact related, that's a pretty crazy coincidence.
I agree. And we only have those two examples of Obscuruses. Or obscuri.
What's the plural for obscurus? Right.
In the Potter universe. So, and all we know about the Obscurus is that it's normally in kids who don't live past the age of like 10 or 11. So you have Credence, who's made it to his late 20s as the longest living Obscurus, which I think says something about his parentage and how strong a wizarding family he does come from.
Yeah. And two, that could be another reason why Grindelwald didn't suspect Credence, because it would be impossible that he would be that old in Grindelwald's mind.
Right.
So here's what doesn't add up. Both of Dumbledore's parents died before Credence / Aurelius was conceived. Credence / Aurelius was born in 1901. Ariana's Obscurus couldn't be controlled and it killed her mother, Kendra, in 1899. Percival Dumbledore died in Azkaban sometime after 1890, but before 1901.
Yeah.
This is why we do not think that Aurelius is Albus's brother.
So I'm officially debunking that Aurelius is Albus Dumbledore's brother. The timeline doesn't add up. Both of Dumbledore's parents are dead.
So why would Grindelwald tell Credence that he's a Dumbledore?
As a concentrated effort to get Credence, who's an Obscurus, to help kill Albus, because Albus Dumbledore is the most powerful wizard. And while Grindelwald is the most feared, he does see Dumbledore as a threat. And they can't attack each other because of this blood pact that they both created. So getting a Obscurus on Grindelwald's side would be the next best thing.
Okay, yeah. So here's the reminder. So Dumbledore and Grindelwald were former flames and in the heat of the moment decided to create a magical blood pact, swearing an oath never to fight each other. The vial itself, the blood pact vial, is supposed to be indestructible when it's created.
Grindelwald and Dumbledore's last major fight is what resulted in Ariana's death. The blood pact went into effect, bounced off Grindelwald, who had the blood pact on him, and it killed Ariana.
Yeah, so they have some beef now. Okay, so here's a reminder. Torquil Travers corners Albus about the Tycho Dodonis prophecy and hopes to get Albus to join them in fighting Grindelwald. Unfortunately, Albus made a blood pact with Grindelwald when he was younger, and as a result of that, he cannot fight against him. Travers is not happy about this. And is that the scene in the movie where we get to see how nice Dumbledore's butt is?
Yes, he's cornered.
Man. And those pants.
Oh, that three-piece suit. Yes. Please. Mm-hmm.
I love me some Jude Law. Yeah. So much.
So it's Dumbledore's body language that leads me to believe that Dumbledore has an idea that he may have unsuspectedly had a role in the prophecy coming to fruition. If you remember at the beginning of Crimes of Grindelwald, Dumbledore explains to Newt that a prophecy about a well-known French family is circulating around the wizarding community and that it may involve Credence, and asks Newt to investigate further. Newt is hesitant, obviously, as this is something Dumbledore can easily figure out on his own, but due to his previous relations with Grindelwald, Albus knows he's being watched heavily by the ministry.
The reality is that the Tycho Dodonis prophecy makes Dumbledore nervous because he thinks it's about himself, but he can't be sure until Newt completes the task and finds out that the prophecy isn't about the Lestrange family.
So here's the Tycho Dodonis prophecy. A son cruelly banished, despair of the daughter, return great avenger with wings from the water. The prophecy is key to the rest of the Fantastic Beasts franchise. It's mentioned at least 4 times alone in Crimes of Grindelwald. I'm convinced it has something to do with the Dumbledore family.
So reminder. The Sacred 28 are 28 British wizarding families that are still truly pure blood.
So remember that, because we're going to circle back to it.
Yeah.
Getting back to who Aurelius's parents are, my educated guess is that Credence's Patronus is a phoenix, as one appeared to him. Could be Fox. So I feel like that was a great Easter egg.
Yeah.
And it follows the Dumbledore family legend. Now, while Aberforth Dumbledore's Patronus is a goat, his brother Albus's Patronus is a phoenix, which makes me believe that Albus Dumbledore is in fact Credence's dad. Case in point, James and Harry both have the same Patronus. Remember, it's a stag.
So now you might be asking yourself, how is that possible if Dumbledore is presumably gay? Well, J.K. Rowling outright said Dumbledore is gay. So with some heavy witchcraft used on Albus Dumbledore, made this prophecy come to pass. This is what we think.
So throughout the whole Harry Potter series, the audience, or we the audience and readers, were introduced to the following spells and curses, potions, multiple times. Okay, so we have Polyjuice Potion, which per the fandom app was referenced 25 different times throughout the whole Potter and Fantastic Beasts series. We have the Imperius Curse, which was noted 30 times throughout both the Harry Potter series and Fantastic Beasts. And then we have a love potion, which was noted 20 different times per the fandom app throughout both series.
So Dumbledore is a powerful wizard, and he would need, you know, a combination of potions and curses used on him to be able to render him powerless. So we also have to remember at this time, he's like 19, right? So he's not as powerful as is going to be. So we believe that either all or some of these spells, curses, and potions were used in an effort to make the Tycho Dodonis prophecy come to pass. So this leads us to, if Albus Dumbledore is presumably Credence's dad, who is Credence's mom? So this was quite a process. I kind of started looking at Dumbledore's close circle of friends, right? Mm-hmm. So he would have a close circle of trust. He just kind of broke up with Grindelwald in a really like traumatic way. And he's probably hanging out with his other friends again. I researched his friends and I found out that Phineas Black, as well as Elpheus Dodge and Horace Slughorn, were like his three pals that he hung around with. Okay. And myself, as a sister with two older brothers, I had many a crush on their cute friends. So my next thought was, who had a younger sister that probably had a major crush on Dumbledore? You know, at Hogwarts, her time at Hogwarts overlapped his. Maybe he was like a few years older. I'm like, who would fit this? Enter Belvina Black. She would have been about 4 years younger than him, maybe 4 years behind in school. And this would not be the first time that a younger sister of a good friend was used / mind controlled by an evil wizard to do his bidding. Remember Ginny Weasley in Chamber of Secrets? I think it could have been Grindelwald and maybe had a lover's revenge plot against Dumbledore. Perhaps he thought that Dumbledore and Phineas Black might have developed a fling and he wanted to find out, and he used Belvina. Or we have another idea on who this could be. But first, let me finish this thought. There could have been a diary. This is where that diary could have began, right?
Oh.
And perhaps somebody slipped it in her bag and she started writing her diary and she started being used for somebody's bidding. I don't think that Belvina cared or knew about the prophecy. I think whoever was behind controlling her did. You know, she's a young, naive girl about to be married off at a young age. And she was just a too like willing pawn. She was probably emotional. She probably was like in love with Dumbledore. She probably was kind of a kid that was up to no good, you know? So she was very, you know, just an all too willing pawn.
So Phineas Black's storyline is huge to how we figured out who Credence's mom is. So long story short, Phineas Black is one of five kids, and four of them don't belong to his dad, including him. His dad is Phineas Nigellus Black. He's a very well-known headmaster at Hogwarts.
And was the headmaster at that time.
Yes.
So on Fandom, I found out that Ursula Flint, who was Phineas's mother.
Yes.
She like got around, like there was this huge story on her.
Yeah.
And it's a secret within the Black family. She had a lot of affairs. That's what made this interesting and seemed like, you know, a viable theory, because Belvina probably had a lot of, you know, emotional turmoil issues. And again, an all too willing pawn.
One of the things that really stuck out was one of the traditions that the Black family has is naming their relatives after stars or constellations. I.e. Sirius is a constellation, Canis Major, which is a dog, which is why his Animagus is a dog in the Harry Potter series. But Draco and Bellatrix are also constellations. So as we were looking at these five kids, four of them are named after constellations and Belvina wasn't. And we were both along the lines of like, why isn't she? Like, what's going on here? And that's not adding up. And that's what put us on the bunny trail to looking into her mom. And that's how we found out about all the affairs that Ursula Flint had, and that four out of the five kids did not belong to Phineas Nigellus Black. So that's some tea for you guys.
Yeah, that is some serious tea.
Word around Hogwarts, man.
Yeah. The whole wizarding world.
Was, right. You
know, yeah. Ursula, she was busy. So perhaps Belvina kind of had that predisposition to be a little sneaky.
Yeah.
You know, and she was also betrothed to Herbert Burke from Borgin and Burks. And she was about to be married off at like a really young age. So maybe she gets this journal, it's slipped into her bag. And then she starts writing about how she doesn't want to marry Herbert Burke. It's like, well, who do you want to be with? And she's like, Dumbledore. And then whoever's controlling her is, you know, leading her along this path to ultimately, you know, pull this huge con on him. And she's probably just wanting it because she wants to be with him. But somebody else is wanting this to happen because they want the prophecy, the Tycho Dedonis prophecy, to be fulfilled.
Something else to take into consideration. Ursula Flint passed away when Belvina was like three. So she had no female role models growing up.
Yeah.
She just had to do what her dad told her to do. This was the early or late 1800s, give or take. Not exactly forward thinking for women at that time.
No.
You know? So she just had to be betrothed to Herbert Burke, and not throwing any shade at Herbert Burke. I'm sure he's a great guy. Or we'll find out if he's a great guy.
Yeah, we are not sure. But Dumbledore is hot, so we can't blame her.
So my personal theory on Belvina is that when she was 15, her biological dad came back into her life and convinced her to carry out this prophecy. She has her moral compass isn't the best. She's being thrown into situations that she doesn't want to be in. So when this man comes into her life and says, I'm your biological dad, this is your purpose. Let me show you how to carry out this prophecy. I think she was down. So my personal take on this is after Belvina marries Herbert Burke, she carries out the prophecy, gets pregnant with Credence by using all this magic on Dumbledore, carries Credence full term, and then tells Herbert she lost the baby, only for it to be arranged by Belvina's biological dad that Credence has been taken overseas to the US by his sister, who was the woman that we see on the boat that sinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So remember the Credence Corvus switcheroo by Leta Lestrange?
Yes.
That's my take. So if we go back to the prophecy.
Yeah. Breaking it down.
Yeah. Breaking the prophecy down for you. A son cruelly banished. That's Credence sent away to the US. Despair of the daughter. Belvina sending away her kid only to find out her child died at sea with her aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Return great avenger with wings from the water. Credence coming back to find out who his family is, only for his family to think he drowned at sea with his aunt. I'm calling it right now. I think there will be a scene where Credence comes into his power when he stops suppressing his magic, and we'll see a Patronus and see a phoenix rise from the water as symbolism of a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just to sum it up and clear it up with everyone, we are saying that Credence Barebone, who is Aurelius Dumbledore, is not Albus's brother, but in fact his son, and his mother is Belvina Black. So who's Belvina's biological father, you ask?
We're calling him Mr. Rosier.
Now, why do we think it's Mr. Rosier?
I know we briefly mentioned it, but if we go back to the Sacred 28, we have a list of 28 wizarding families, what the Blacks would call toujours pure, purebloods that only believe in staying with pureblood wizards. The Lestrange family was in fact on there, but since the crimes of Grindelwald, we can now rule out the Lestrange family.
Yep.
There were a couple other French names on there that stuck out was Rosier.
Mm-hmm.
Rosier is a significant name in the Sacred 28. It's French, just like Lestrange, mm-hmm. which is why everyone jumped to the conclusion that the prophecy was about the Lestrange family. Rosier is also the name of a fallen angel who is considered the demon of tainted love and seduction, which perfectly checks out on how Credence and Belvina were made, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When Leta Lestrange was talking about her family tree in the mausoleum, she mentioned that one of her relatives marked the women in her family tree with a flower. Remember as she opened up the family tree?
Mm-hmm.
So I bet every French person was just like, ah, La Rosier, you know? And that translates to rose tree and or rose bush.
Yeah.
That's something that did not cross my mind, but was a huge Easter egg as it was presenting itself.
Yeah.
Minette Rosier Lestrange, Leta's however many great grandmother, is the one who marked the women in her family tree with flowers. So I'm guessing it's because she wanted to subtly show the importance of the Rosier name in the wizarding world when marrying into another strong French-based name like the Lestranges.
Yeah.
Case in point, Vinda Rosier. She's Grindelwald's accomplice. She's the Bellatrix Lestrange to Voldemort dynamic. Like she is Grindelwald's right-hand man, or in this case, right-hand witch. She's the one that manipulates Queenie to come to the dark side and work with Grindelwald. If you remember, Vinda goes to the French Ministry of Magic and takes a Lestrange family tree that leads everyone to the mausoleum, except I initially thought she stole it. And that was not the case. Vinda is inadvertently a part of the Lestrange family because of Minette Rosier. It's her, however many great grandmother too, which means Vinda and Leta are fourth cousins.
Yeah.
So Vinda's mom is the woman who died at sea transporting Credence to America, which makes Vinda's mom Mr. Rosier's sister. So, and Vinda was raised by Mr. Rosier.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I'm wondering, you know, because Venda, she is Grindelwald's accomplice, but I don't know if it's the same dynamic, because Bellatrix was like
in love with Voldemort.
With Voldemort, just desperately so. I mean, she's definitely a dedicated accomplice, but I am very curious as to what her motives are, like if she's just one of those like religious freaks where she's just like the sacred 28 and it's just very, you know, if she's raised by Mr. Rosier and he's another one of those people that are like, this is pure blood, you know, crusade. Like if she's raised by him, then she's probably has the same sort of ideology.
I think it's more or less like Mr. Rosier was so engulfed with the prophecy, Venda being raised by Mr. Rosier, her uncle, who is her surrogate dad at that point. And with Rosier being so engulfed with this prophecy and making sure it comes to pass, I think she also wanted to make sure it came to pass, and partnering with Grindelwald was the best way to see it happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I want to see that backstory come out. I want to see how all three of them meet and how she like approaches Grindelwald, who's a, you know, who's a seer, like, did he not see this coming? Who influenced Grindelwald to make this happen, to get credence, to, you know, to, I feel like there's someone who's smarter than Grindelwald, and it could be Mr. Rosier to say, hey, I've put the steps in motion to make this come to pass. Now you have to go get credence. And he's overseas in the US. Go get that Obscurus and we'll make sure that Obscurus kills Dumbledore. And then you'll be the best wizard.
Yeah. So it would make sense that if there's like this journal involved, that it's slipped into Belvina's bag, whether it's by Mr. Rosier or Mr. Rosier meets Grindelwald when he's younger and has her do it, or somehow, because Venda at this point, she's like a baby. She wouldn't be old enough to be involved, or if she's even born at this point with Belvina, you know, in like 1900 or whatever, like that's how it starts. She's given this journal and she starts being controlled to kind of tip it off, because Mr. Rosier, he probably doesn't care about his like bastard child. He just cares about the prophecy, right?
Right.
But he could come off to her as if he does care about her and easily manipulate her into being a part of this. Because if you think about the prophecy, like despair of the daughter, like think about despair. She was probably in a really dark place. And then she probably realized she has to give this baby away. Like that is some, that's
rough. Yeah.
That's some despair. And then you find out that your baby you sent away dies, you know, like that's some heavy, heavy despair there.
Yeah.
You know, so whoever decided that she was going to be a pawn, they did not care about
not at all
Belvina at all. And perhaps Belvina, like maybe she stopped wanting to be a pawn, and, you know, maybe she didn't want her baby to go. Maybe she wanted to keep her baby. Who knows? But then if he's raising Venda from a young age and he sees these, you know, he sees this opportunity to mold this child from a young age to do his bidding, like he couldn't quite do it with Belvina. He tried. He got, you know, a little bit of what he needed, but then they think that the child dies. So I don't know. Maybe Venda is like his second, he's thinking this is like his second chance to make things happen. Who knows? And she puts her in touch with Grindelwald. Because you would think at this point, if Belvina thinks her baby dies, but Mr. Rosier, his goal was for her to carry the child. He might think he's starting over again.
Maybe,
you know, or maybe it's like, oh, maybe it wasn't Rosier. Maybe it was Lestrange.
I do think you could be onto something with the diary, because we've seen so many other artifacts come back into play, like the Philosopher's Stone. We've seen the Sword of Gryffindor at least three different times in the Harry Potter series. So I'm counting on that making their cameo. But we've seen the Deluminator. We've seen a handful of artifacts make its way back. So what if the diary started with Belvina and then got passed off to Tom Riddle? Because by the time the third Fantastic Beasts movie starts, it's 1939, which would put Tom Riddle at like 12 or 13.
True. So what I think is, because this is like a Black family artifact, right? Mr. Rosier will give it to Belvina. It stays in the family. And like, you know, the Black family, they are, you know, followers of Voldemort, right? Or kind of they lean towards the dark magic. So if they have this journal, you know, it gets passed down. So who puts it in Ginny Weasley's bag? Lucius Malfoy. Who is he married to? You know, part of the Black family. Okay, so Narcissa Malfoy was Narcissa Black, who's Bellatrix Lestrange's sister. So this is a Black family artifact and has been for a long time. Mm-hmm. So yes, Tom Riddle came into possession of it, but he's in Slytherin House. He probably had friends in Slytherin House. Maybe swiped it off somebody and then eventually, or, you know, manipulated somebody into giving him this diary.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, it goes back to the Malfoy family / Black family. And then again, is used in a similar way, you know, years and years and years later.
I mean, great reoccurring theme.
Yeah. It had to start somewhere. Like, how did Lucius Malfoy get this diary?
Right.
Maybe it was always something that he had, you know, because the other Horcruxes, they belonged to different people. Like there's one in Ravenclaw, there's one, they're all over the place. So this is just another one of those things that he either stole from somewhere, you know, saw to his advantage, like, okay, I'm going to take this and use this. And Grindelwald could have very easily done that, or it could have just started with Mr. Rosier creating this journal, giving it to Belvina. And then it starts to become passed on from there, from the Black family. To sum up this theory, there's going to be more to follow later. We promise. Credence's parents are Albus Dumbledore and Belvina Black. Belvina's dad is Mr. Rosier, and Mr. Rosier's sister is Vinda's mom, who died at sea taking Credence to the U.S. Vinda and Belvina are first cousins, and Vinda and Leta are fourth cousins.
So there's so much to look forward to. We're going to do a part two because we just have theory for days, folks. Theories for days. Okay. Things to look forward to, folks. Jacob Kowalski's crazy family history.
So crazy.
Part two of the Tycho Dedonis theory and an epic ending to Fantastic Beasts.
And now it is time for the fangirl spotlight of the week. This week it goes to Kelzilla Hair Studio, a spooktacular salon studio located in Diamond Bar, California, owned by hair witch Kelsey Amore. She specializes in transforming hair into colorful concoctions that will fit to your liking. Kelsey graduated from Paul Mitchell School in Costa Mesa, California, and decided to put up her own studio to create magic for all her clients. Her biggest goal is to allow each and every one of her clients to look and feel as authentically and unapologetically themselves, because she was licensed to create hair magic. Check out her Instagram page for her hair transformations at kelzilla.hair. Okay, so we are so excited to have launched our Etsy store. It has a variety of custom-made digital downloads designed by yours truly. For this week only, September 1st through the 7th, we are offering 20% off our Etsy store with the code HARRYPOTTER. The link to our store and all the info will be in the show notes. This coupon code is only available to those who have listened to our episode. The fangirls are so appreciative of our faithful listeners, and we want to say thank you. So for the first 3 5-star written reviews on Apple Podcasts we received from September 1st on, we will mail you a special gift. Email us a screenshot of the review at thefangirlspodcast@yahoo.com to enter.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast to hear all of our latest episodes.
We want to answer your burning questions, so give us a follow on Instagram at thefangirlspodcast and Twitter at the_fan_girls, and visit our Etsy shop, which is called The Fangirls Podcast, and like our community page on Facebook to join the conversation. See you next time.
See you next time, folks. We here at The Fangirls Podcast LLC are not affiliated with the following: J.K. Rowling, J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World, Warner Brothers, Warner Brothers Studios, or any part of the Fantastic Beasts series. We're just very dedicated fans.
Super dedicated.
Super dedicated.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.